How can we block these negative thoughts from coming into our minds and getting transmitted to the people we associate with? Please give us a few words of advice on that. Well, I'll give you my particular realization, and I don't think it's global, meaning that it's the only way. And it may be that it is my way because I've been a devotee a long time. Well, a long, not a long time, but a long time in this body, and probably, longer than most people in ISKCON. So I've had time to deal with it, and sometimes the way I personally deal with it might be difficult for others. But let me give you my thoughts on it. And I'll relate it to japa, and this will also help your japa. A lot of times when we're chanting japa, the mind is going very strongly, and we want to calm the mind down because we know that in order to calm the mind down, we need to calm the mind down to hear the mantra. And my experience is actually it's one step further. You don't even need the mind. The mind has nothing to do with chanting. But to hear the mantra is to be present with it, and to be present with it means to experience it. That this is what's going on right now. You're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. What is that experience? Hare Krishna, Hare, what is that experience? Experience does not exist in your mind. The experience exists here within your heart, because that's where we experience things. We tend to experience things. Well, if you're nervous, you'll experience it in your stomach. If you're feeling affection, you'll experience it in your heart. If you're feeling anxiety, you might experience it here or in your shoulders. But in theory, hopefully, if we're actually hearing the mantra and absorbing ourselves in the experience, it'll be in the heart. It'll be something joyful or very peaceful or very pleasant or very relishable. Hare Krishna, just kind of feeling it vibrating in your body. So that's the experience of being with Krishna, which you can drop yourself into, and then you don't have to worry about what your mind is doing because your mind won't do anything when you're experiencing. So it's kind of a, what I'm saying is, it's kind of a state in which you're beyond the mind, or the mind is just put on pause, and you're actually in the state of experiencing. And you can get very good at this, where you can stay with the mantra and just be there when you're chanting. It's just you and the mantra, and so there's no battling with the mind. So if we go back to thoughts which are negative, and we kind of use this analogy that I'm either there or not, what I think is a better way of dealing with the mind, or the problem in dealing with the mind, is that things are coming up in the mind because our very existence is nourishing those things. In other words, you might say, well, I'm having envious thoughts of someone. Well, why do we have envious thoughts? It's not because we're not envious, right? Now, we don't always understand this, but the more you look at it, the more obvious it becomes. I have envious thoughts because I'm envious, right? I have jealous thoughts because I'm jealous. I have lustful thoughts because I'm lustful. Why is something attractive in the material world? It's attractive because I want to enjoy it. That's the only reason it's attractive. It's because I'm attached to it, and I'm attached to enjoying it for myself. That's why it's attractive. If I'm not attached to enjoying it, it's not attractive. There are many things in this world that I'm sure you're not attracted to. Like, probably most of the women in this world are not attracted to Harley-Davidson motorcycles. They're probably not attracted to Honda motorcycles or any motorcycle. So when a woman walks by a Harley-Davidson dealer, she doesn't start drooling, going, "Oh my God, those motorcycles are so cool and they sound so cool." She probably thinks, "God, those things are ugly and they sound like really annoying, and they're so dangerous, and I could stand being on one." So there's nothing there. But some guy who's been on a motorcycle since he's 13, and had a million motorcycles, and he drives by, he's like, "Wow, look at those," and he's like getting all emotional and just wants to get on his motorcycle and ride. So that's the way it works. So you're saying, So in this example, we could say, well, Prabhu, how do I control my mind from wanting to jump on a Harley Davidson? You can't, because you have a desire to enjoy it. So you have to go to a deeper level. And you have to deal on a deeper level with your attachment to Harley Davidsons. And then, you start going in and say, well, actually, I'm a devotee. Plus, they're dangerous and it's just a diversion and blah, 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 blah. And maybe at some point, you kind of get to a level where there starts to become a bit of renunciation, a bit of detachment. Actually, I'm losing my interest. This happens all the time. I used to, when I started surfing, I lived by the ocean. I started surfing when I was 13. And sports, particularly surfing, and I'm sure many other sports, are very addicting. Like, because they give you a kind of high you just don't get from anything else. Maybe you get it from skydiving or skiing, but there's those few sports where just like you get this phenomenal high. I mean, riding a bike is fun. It's not like surfing. Playing tennis is fun. It's not like surfing. Going bowling is recreation. It's not like surfing. So certain sports are very addictive. And for us surfers, our whole life, it just evolved around surfing. The surfing conditions, you'd always be checking the surf, the wind conditions that would affect the surf, where the swells came. Are they coming from the west, the south, the north? What direction the wind is blowing? All these things, where the storms are now, the kind of board you ride in certain waves. It was like the spots you go because the waves are different, the secret spot that nobody knows about, the island you want to go to. It's just like on and on. It's this whole intense attachment meditation. So now you're saying, so I'm saying, how can I control my mind? Because it's always thinking about surfing. Well, the problem is, again, I'm attached to it. So I've seen in my progress in devotional service, now I live, don't live so as close to the beach as I did growing up, but I live close enough that I can go in a few hours. And so when I'm at the beach now, I think, yeah, I like the beach, I like the ocean and the body surfing and everything. But it's just the point where it's just like, I'm just like surfing, it's like I'm over that. It's just, it's not what Krishna consciousness. It's not what I want to do with my life now in Krishna consciousness. So at that point, you think I have to battle with thoughts of surfing? Of course not, because the attachment's not there. So if we're simply battling on the level of the mind, it's like trying to knock a bubble out in a carpet and it'll just pop up somewhere else. You see? But you have to go to the root cause of it. Give another example and then I'll answer your questions. One devotee asked Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada, why is sexual attraction so strong? He said, because you want to enjoy it. It's a simple answer, but the implications are not simple. The implications are very deep. Just one thing. Why is this so attractive? Because you want to enjoy it. Why are those thoughts always there? Whatever it is, if it's sexual attraction or if it's eating too much or whatever the problem is, if it's envy, if it's pride, why? Because we're getting something out of it. We're getting something out of the envy. We get something out of the resentment. We get something out of the pride. And we are unwilling to confront it and deal with it. And therefore, we're only dealing on this level of trying to control the thoughts. And you're not going to win. It's like, that's not the level to deal with it. We said, well, I'll go to the level of intelligence and I'll analyze it. And that can help. But it's really got to be a fundamental shift in your consciousness, in your subtle body, that detaches you and said, this, I don't want this because this is hurting me. This is the wrong consciousness. I mean, we know how strong jealousy is. We know how strong envy is. We know how strong resentment can be. We know how strong anger can be. But if you get to the fundamental core of it, you can alter that by your own decision to do it and be detached from it. Is it going to be perfect right away? No. But if we resist it and say, no, I'm not really envious, it's just I have envious thoughts. Okay, you believe that? So you think like that? You believe that? You're going to convince yourself of that? I can guarantee you're going to continue to have envious thoughts. Whereas if trying to sit up straight in this chair, it keeps leaning back. Maybe I could straighten it now. Sit up like a yogi, Mahatma. Don't slouch. So, but if we're willing to confront it and say, no, actually, I am envious. That's why I'm speaking enviously. That's why I'm finding fault. Otherwise, we think, no, I'm not envious. I'm just smart. You're too stupid to see the faults. Or you're too naive or optimistic. Oh, everybody has good qualities. You don't even see them. You're blind. You don't have any judgment or discretion. So, I could think like that and convince myself, actually, I'm not envious. I'm just smart, which is why I find fault with everybody, because I'm smart enough to see it, smart enough to know what's wrong. You could think like that, but it's not going to control your thoughts. But when you acknowledge, you said, actually, I'm envious, or I'm just a fault finder. And you accept that and you deal with it. That's where the work has to be done. If it's just on the mind, good luck. I wish you the best of luck on your journey, but you're going to be battling with that because the mind is not the cause of it. A lot of men, particularly single men who want to remain single but are finding it difficult, they'll battle in their mind with sexual attraction, but it's deeper than that. And they'll try to use their intelligence and say, well, actually, the female body, it's just really, not the female, anybody. It's really just, it's a machine. It's made of mucus, bile, air, blood, stool, so many things. It shouldn't be attractive. And they're saying that, and they're trying to convince themselves. But they're attracted. She's so beautiful. Stool, urine, pus. Oh, she's so beautiful. It doesn't always work. That's the jnana process. And what do we learn in Shastra? The jnanis can't perfectly control their senses. It has to be in the heart. So what did Prabhupada say? He said, yes, the woman's body is made of this, but ultimately he said, you should think you are a servant of women, or if you're a woman, you should think you're a servant of man. Prabhupada said, you should not see a woman as a machine for sex. So the problem is that a man sees a woman as an object of enjoyment. That's the problem. So all this gyan, and maybe it'll temporarily help. Well, actually, this, that, and the next thing, it's just a body, and 50 years from now, she's going to be ugly, even though she looks like a beautiful flower now. And there are descriptions like that in the Bhagavatam. Everything's going to fade away, and it's temporary. And you're trying to convince your mind. And still your mind's going, but she's beautiful. I want to talk to her. Ah, she's so attractive. I want to talk to her. Because your heart is not changing. So if we deal with things in the fundamental, on the level of heart, and we alter our consciousness, then what happens when the man sees the woman or the woman sees the man? Oh, how can I serve them? Or is this neutral? If there's no opportunity to serve, it's just neutral. Because they're no longer in the bhava or nature of the enjoyer, but they're in the bhava of the servant. And that's where the problem is solved. Now, we could have 25 classes to answer this question, but I just wanted to throw that out. And if you have more questions about it, you can ask me. So, Harsha, Bhaktinkar says, hearing the sound of Harleys coming down the street can bring back emotions. Yeah, maybe Carol was, maybe you were riding on the back of a lot of Harleys in your day, right? Could bring back good emotions or bad emotions. You're riding on the back of Harleys of all these guys who like messed your life up, or whatever, Deviation. There's deviation and there's devotion. Well, how did I use the word deviation? I forgot. I was so absorbed in trance of what I was saying. But anyway, I think you got the point, is that Whatever in the what is ever going on in the mind is going on in the heart. And if our mind is being affected, you can also understand that people around you are being affected. Now, if you want to help another devotee in Krishna consciousness, and on this level of consciousness, you're thinking, this guy is useless, he'll never be Krishna conscious. Or he's foolish, or he's stupid, or he's this or that. You're communicating something to that person on some level, and I'll, if you don't believe it, I'll make you believe it, because this is not some psychic, subtle, spiritual phenomena. This is understood by people who are not so spiritual. Bhakti and Carol, no multiple men, only one Harley in Carol's life. All right, Christian David. I may not have the details correct, but something to this, something like this. There was an experiment to see how a person would affect another person's consciousness. So what they did, it's actually two things I can tell you. So what they did, this was a situation in which students were being interviewed to be admitted to a college or to be hired for a job, something like that. So the interviewer was told, in some interviews, we want you to have very negative thoughts and generate thoughts in your mind or feelings that this person is not qualified to come into the school, is not really capable. And then with other people, generate thoughts of appreciation and how capable you think they are. And so they videoed it, and they may have monitored it in other ways. And they saw that the person, when they were encouraged, they were very enthusiastic, very clear, very lucid, and very powerful in their presentation, very self-confident. And it was just the opposite when the person was thinking negatively. You could see the person was not speaking with confidence. They were tripping over their words, so to speak, and having difficulty presenting themselves positively and confidently. There's another experiment. You like that experiment? If you're going to try it, try the positive one. If you have kids, do it on your kids, because you can alter them with your consciousness. Just appreciate them. You don't have to say it. Just appreciate them. They'll feel appreciated. I think we know this with animals, you know. Those of you who have animals, you know animals can feel you, right? I was taking a walk today. We have a little forest out here. And so some deer came running. And usually deers are very afraid of humans, because humans like to, around here in Alaska, they like to shoot them, because they think that's fun, to shoot deer. I haven't fully grasped that yet, and I don't know if I ever will, and I don't know if I want to, but they do that. So I saw the deer, and the deer naturally has some fear, and I said, okay, I will, and deers generally, when they see you, they'll run away. And so I said, no, I'll just be very friendly in my consciousness, my heart, towards the deer. So I just stood there and had a very positive attitude for the deer. And the deer just stood there and looked at me, and it didn't go anywhere. I said, oh, that's cool. So we experienced this with animals. Now, they did another experiment, and they told students, unbeknown to the professor, that for 10 minutes I want you to be very focused, appreciative of the professor, very attentive, very open to learning, and be fully present. And so the professor got very inspired, and he was very animated in his speaking, very enthusiastic about what he was saying, very clear, precise. Then after the 10 minutes, the students were instructed, okay, after 10 minutes, do the opposite. Just be distracted and just kind of disrespect the professor by not really, just looking down, looking at your watch, and just not paying attention to him, and just kind of blowing him off, so to speak. And what they found is that after a few minutes, the professor just, like, he could hardly speak. He couldn't, you know, everybody was distracted and everyone was not with him. He could hardly speak. I've had this experience that if I go to a temple and the devotees are very in to hearing class, I actually don't even have to prepare because they pull it out of me. It's like I can just feel this and their enthusiasm. They want to know about Krishna consciousness. They want to know it. They're just pulling it out of me and I can feel it and I'm getting all these realizations. And sometimes I can fully prepare for a class, but if I'm sitting in a class where people are going, I wonder if he's going to say anything interesting. Or they're thinking, he's probably just going to say what he always says. Or I wonder how many verses he's going to quote. Because if he doesn't quote 15, then I'll give him an F in this class. Or someone else is thinking, do I have to sit through this class? It's like I'm sick of sitting in Bhagavatam classes. So now I'm sitting in this environment, right? And I'm trying to be all animated and fired up, and everybody's just like got their head down, bored to death. And after a while, it's like, okay, let's end the class. I can't say anything. So I'm the audience is affecting me. Now, I promised you in this class we would speak something about how we affect others. Now, I'm just drawing this out for your own introspection. I'm not saying you do this. I'm not saying anyone you know does this. I'm throwing it out. But some people do this. Let's say you believe a certain person acts in a certain way, does certain things. Like Pallavi said, she thought her son was going to do something. So she expected it, and he did it. Let's take it to a higher level. Sometimes we expect somebody who's in a higher position, perhaps, let's say, in our movement, to make a certain mistake or to make a wrong decision. And we may be envious of that person and critical of that person. And it's possible that we have the power, believe it or not, that can some way influence that person to make the wrong decision so that we can say, ha ha, I told you so. Now, you might say, I'm not that powerful. But what if 500 devotees are thinking like that about, let's say, the local temple board? They're going to make this decision because they always do, and I don't like it, and this and that. And what do you know? They made that decision. And now we blame them for making that decision. Did we have anything to do with it? I'm just throwing it out there for you to explore. Do you have some connection to what's going on another level where it appears you have no connection? Srila Prabhupada was asked once, the devotee said, this influence now, there's so many people are becoming vegetarians, and there's PETA, the organization PETA, and so many other organizations and vegetarian clubs. And the devotees asked, they said, Prabhupada, is this the result of our movement, or is this the result of Harinam? And Prabhupada said, yeah. So by our, you know, influence, it started to influence other people. Just by our practice of vegetarianism, our compassion, as Prabhupada said, you know, the cow, when his throat is killed, when your throat is chopped, it would hurt, right? Don't you think? The cow's throat, when he's it's getting late here, okay, reorient thoughts. When the cow's throat is cut, that he doesn't feel pain. So that's how we feel as devotees, that we see meat and it just makes us feel horrible. It's a dead animal. So we have that consciousness. And that consciousness, because there's so many of us, it's get communicated out there and it affects other people. It's not just that we tell people to be vegetarians. It's a lot more than that. 7% of communication is what you say. Who you are, what's going on in you as a person, is communicating much more than what you say. So now, Okay, so Bhakti and Carol. Harsha says, I too like the aspect of service mentality in dealing with people. Okay, this is a really good point. Not only people, but matter. Because how do we see the world? Okay, here's a beautiful flower. How do we see it? For Krishna. This is Krishna's flower. Right? I love that flower. It's my favorite flower. No. That's material life. I love that flower. My favorite. That's my wife's favorite flower. Let me give it to Krishna. I'll give it to my wife. Of course, if you're having a big fight, then just give it to your wife. Because if you come home and first offer it to Krishna, she may still be mad. Anyway, you see the principle that the mentality of the devotee is it's always service. So because it's always service, there's a detachment. And in that way, we see everything connected to Krishna. That's our consciousness, and therefore we connect it to Krishna. And then when we see other people, because we're in that consciousness of connecting, we see we're servants, because we want to connect them with Krishna also. We don't want to connect them. Hey, let me connect you with me. You can wash my feet. Let me connect you with me. I can exploit you and pay you $6.50 an hour, whatever the minimum wage is, and I can make you work 14 hours a day, and you know, and I'll make millions of dollars, and you know, you'll barely be able to pay the rent for a one-bedroom apartment. I mean, that's the material. That's material consciousness. What can I get? So now, we as devotees, we want to raise the consciousness of the world, and one of the traps we fall into is that we're going to raise it solely by what we do. That is not true. We do raise it by what we do, but we also raise it by raising our own consciousness, because that is affecting the environment, it's affecting people, as we've been discussing tonight. So I'll give you another example, and we'll go to, well, let's go to Bhakti and Carol's comment. Hey, Kremlin, Haribo, all the way from Texas. Carol says, funny how you as a man can first assume many men on Harleys in my life, then assume there is one man with a Harley. Is this imagining because I'm female? I don't know what I'm talking about. We can erase all of that. I was kind of joking. Anyway, I never rode a Harley, so I don't even know what goes on in Harley world. No, I only assumed Harleys because I thought you said only one man, or maybe you meant only one. I thought you meant only one Harley, but anyway, no problem with Harleys. Harleys are cool. We can use them for Krishna. And I know I wasn't assuming. I wasn't assuming. I thought you had said you were on Harleys. Anyway. So another really interesting example. I don't know if any of you have done book distribution, but an interesting thing happens on book distribution. And if you have done book distribution, you experienced this, probably. But if you haven't, then I'll explain it. A lot of times, when a devotee goes out on book distribution and doesn't really want to be out there, or maybe wants to be out there, but he's not really confident about it, or he's fearful, and it's an anxiety, or he's thinking nobody wants a book, or why are we doing this? What do you think happens? What kind of people do you think he meets? Do you think he meets all these people say, oh, I feel so sorry for you. Could I buy a book? They just like walk up to him out of nowhere. Because he's sending out that vibe. So he's just attracting empathy, sympathy from all these people. So he just goes to the airport and stands there and just kind of cries. And all these people say, but say, can I buy a book? No. What happens to him is he approaches people and he somehow or other meets all the people at that store or that airport or that park that have no interest whatsoever in spiritual life. In fact, he or she meets a lot of people that are quite adverse, who tend to say nasty things like, why don't you get a job? Or get out of here, or don't talk to me. Or if you're a man with a shaved head, they might say something like, get a haircut. In fact, there was one devotee who used to distribute books, and practically every week somebody would punch him because he would agitate them so much. So when we're in the wrong consciousness, that's what we attract. Now we're in the when we're in the right consciousness, we're praying, Krishna, please send me some sincere person. I know they're there. And you kind of like see everyone as a devotee. That person must be a devotee. And you approach them like they're a devotee. And what happens? You meet that person. I met so many nice people today. Because that's where your consciousness is. Now Prabhupada said something interesting. He said, when you distribute a book, what you say is not important. He said, what? But it's how you say it. And so we had discussed before, excuse me, that how you say something or what you're feeling affects what you say, because you carry the emotion. It's a vibration that you carry in your voice and in your body posture and just your existence. So Prabhupada went on to say, he said, when you distribute a book, and you can apply this to any aspect of bringing people to Krishna, you should feel, or they should, you should feel like they're your friend. Or he said, they should feel like you're their friend. Right? So you go up and approach somebody as if that person were your friend, like you knew them. What do you think they feel? And Prabhupada said, the reason they take the book is because they feel like you're their friend. So I thought, okay, this is good. So I was never like a super fantastic book distributor. I mean, some book distributors were just like powerful, powerful people, creative people, very bold, very daring, very extroverted, and just really good at it. But I was not bad at it, but I wasn't so great. So what I found is that if I approached everybody as if this was somebody who I knew, this was like, I'd imagine this is like my friend Barry or my friend Chris or something like that. And I just approach him almost like that's who I was talking to. I would notice these dramatic changes in how people responded to me. And how much easier it was to distribute a book, and how relaxed I was because I felt like I was talking to somebody that I had known for 10 years, and it just like it came right across. So these are experiences that book distributors have all the time. We're afraid to approach people. Then when we approach them, they're like, "No, thank you." You're just like you kind of push them away if you're not confident that. Well, do people really need a book? Then they go, no, I don't need that. But if you're really, then I'll tell you something really funny. Okay. This is so funny. For those of you who've distributed books, you can relate to this more. But hopefully, or I'll try to make this relatable. Maybe you could relate to this in another aspect of your life. We, as book distributors, when we would go out and distribute, we'd be a little cold in the morning, but if the book distribution was good, we would get very fired up, and we would get the more fired up we got, the more enthusiastic we got, the more bold we got. And it was kind of like there was this huge shift in our consciousness. Even like the introverted devotees would just become very free and easy talking to people. Hey, how are you? Where you come from? Yeah, is that your mother? Is that your daughter? Yeah, you guys are wonderful. Where are you from? Just like you could be a talk show host, like that's kind of enter this zone. And then we saw when we were in the zone, most people would take books because we were in the zone, the Sankirtan zone. So my friend and I, at one point, we were young doing Sankirtan, and Sankirtan for us as brahmacharis was, how should I put it? It was a lot of fun because brahmacharya life is very strict, right? But you go on Sankirtan and you're just out there joking with people and laughing. It was kind of like the opposite of brahmacharya life in a sense. We could kind of be loose, not that we were loose, but we could just kind of be more free. Hey, dude, what's going on? What's going down? Give me five. Yeah, we do could be like that. We're in the temple. We're all Hare Krishna Prabhu. So one day we were kind of taking it to the limits, and we were in the zone. We were inside the zone. We were there. And then we realized we didn't actually have to say anything. So we would like go up to people and we would just point to their eyes and point to our badge. We had ISKCON badge and we'd point to our collection bucket and we would just do like that. And the people would just give, they go, oh, okay. And they would just give donations. And we would sit and watch one another, and it was like entertainment for us because we knew what was going on. We knew we were in the Sankirtan zone. And when you're in the Sankirtan zone, it's just you are there, and your communication is entirely your existence, and you don't even have to say anything, and people take a book or give a donation, believe it or not. Or you're in the zone, and you don't have to say much. You go, we're just distributing these books, blah, blah, blah. It's just a donation. You like spent 30 seconds, and people like it. Okay. And if you're watching it, it doesn't make sense to you because you're watching the Sankirtan devotee and he didn't say anything. He just said a few lines. Excuse sir, glad to meet you. This is Sri Krishna Sankirtan. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. We're distributing his books. We're just taking donations, whatever you can. Okay, sure. Why not? You're in the zone. You would say, excuse me, sir, Chaito Darpanam Marjanam. Glad to meet you. We're doing a book marathon today. We're going to distribute 100 books. Can you buy 99? Okay, we'll just sell you one. Is that cool? And it's each, and they're just laughing, giving you the money. So we as devotees, as we elevate our consciousness, as we elevate ourselves in Krishna consciousness, we bring people in. And that's why when people come to our temples, if we're miserable, you think they're going to become devotees. Hey, I went to Hare Krishna temple, everybody was miserable. And they were pretending to be happy, but I could see, I could feel they were miserable. I'm not going to join them. When you go to a community of people who are feeling the bliss of Krishna consciousness, people who are happy inside themselves, have a taste for chanting, then what's going to happen? People are going to say, I just want to go to your temple. I feel something special. What are they feeling? They're feeling the hearts of the devotees. That's what's special, isn't it? So every one of us has a little part to play in elevating the consciousness of the whole planet. And that was Prabhupada's idea. He wanted to create a revolution. And he said, Prabhupada said, if 1% of the population of the world becomes Krishna conscious, the whole world will become Krishna conscious. It only requires 1% of the people. Pretty interesting idea, isn't it? If 1% of us become Krishna conscious, it's going to elevate the whole consciousness of the planet. And Prabhupada said we could create Satya Yuga in Kali Yuga with Krishna consciousness. You could alter everything that's going on. But if we are keeping ourselves in material consciousness, then how can we help other people? We can't. So, thank you, Harsha, for your compliments. And David said, wow, yes, it is well. And if you take it to a further level, you will see your consciousness can affect so many things. It's like, when they had the oil spill in Louisiana, wherever it was. All these people are complaining, right? Well, like, hello, did you have anything to do with it? They're all complaining, oh, the oil spill. Do you drive a car? Do you need gasoline in your car? Well, did you have some connection with it? Is there some way you've created the need for gas? Yeah, because you don't want to ride a horse, do you? You want the comfort of your nice, comfortable car. So, did you have some responsibility for that oil spill? Of course you did. Do you want to admit it? Of course you don't. Did you create the oil industry? Well, we know if no one eats meat, there's no meat industry. So if everyone drives a horse or a bullock cart, there's no need. Or of course we could have solar energy. But you start to see connections. We know the meat industry is caused by the consumers. But we may not see how we are affecting the environment, or we are in some ways by our own desire supporting industries that are polluting the world or destroying it in some way. Like Prabhupada said, the only trees should be chopped down for books or for making houses, but for not for printing books that aren't Krishna conscious. So if we are, you say, well, they're chopping down trees. Well, are you reading all these other books that have nothing to do with your spiritual life? Well, your consciousness is affecting on some level. So these are nice things to meditate upon. So Pallavi says, more realizations that I need to pray so much to Krishna. So much to help me with my conditional mind and its ways of thinking, yeah. But as I said, go right to the source of the cause of the problem. The thinking is the effect. That's the point. How we're thinking is the effect. Our consciousness is the cause. It's causing the thinking. It's a nice thing to meditate on, you know. The very root of the problem is our viewpoint, how we're seeing. Our consciousness, how we're impregnating our consciousness on this world. You know, I am the enjoyer. You impregnate that consciousness, I am the enjoyer. And now you're trying to control your mind. Well, good luck. All the best. It's not going to work. You have to get right to the root of that false ego conception that you're the enjoyer. That's how you control your mind. Otherwise, you'll just be like a gyani, just trying to convince yourself why you should control your mind. Or you'll do some mindfulness meditation and you'll go out, leave, and still feel like you're the enjoyer, and your mind will get disturbed. So it'll have some temporary benefit. But if you come to the level of I'm servant, Krishna is the enjoyer, I'm meant to help him enjoy, then, okay, now your mind's gonna calm down. That's the idea. So we've gone a little bit over. I think it was worth it. If you like to write me or have any other questions, then you can write me. I'll put it down here, mahat@aol.com. Yes, not ala.com. It says AOL, mahat@aol.com. It's AOL.com. Or go to my website, mahatmadas.com, and you can read some of the articles I've written. I haven't written an article about this, but I should. And maybe we can get Pallavi to transcribe this lecture, and then I can take from it and we can make an article. That'd be cool, right? I think we should do that. Okay, so we'll see all of you next week. Yeah, I will be here next week. I'm in my office here. And please, please, please don't just allow these instructions to go here, because if it stays here, nothing's going to change. This is not the place where things change. Allow the instructions to go in here, because this is where it's going to change. And that is why we'll say, I've heard this 1,000 times, but I haven't changed, because it's just, the mind's just analyzing. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Maybe I should do that. Yeah, I wonder how I could do that. Yeah, I'll think about doing that. Maybe I'll do it next week. Or, yeah, I like that. That was very inspiring. That's the mind. The mind can be inspired. And you think you actually got it, and a week later you're down in the doldrums. Oh, everything's so bad. We want to bring it in here and make fundamental shifts in how we're viewing the world, viewing other people, viewing our bhakti, viewing life, viewing ourselves. That then it becomes part of who you are. When it comes here, it becomes part of who you are. And when it's part of who you are, it is. That's what it is. Right? Like, if we're proud, that's who we are. That's we're existing as this proud person. If we do work on ourselves and we come to a more humble position here, not here, then we're going to act in a more humble way. It's just because it's become who we are. So that's the idea. Okay? So we're rooting for all of you. Bring it in here, what you're learning every day in Krishna consciousness, bring it into your heart. And you'll find tremendous value, or tremendous permanent. We want permanent change. And we can all do this, okay? So till next week, Hari Bol.